So the new record, So Ferocious, is all about being ferocious. And a lot of it is about standing up to people who are haters. I think we can just call them haters. That's the simplest way to say it. Standing up to haters, because as you might have heard, haters are going to hate.
I'm Mayor Betsy Price, and we're keeping Fort Worth funky on the Funky Town Podcast. I hope you're ready. This show's going to get a little bit funky and a lot of fun.
Walking through the city feeling so ferocious, I could take anyone. You ain't gonna see me run from you, no way, no way. Everything you said to me was so atrocious, you ought to take it back. If I had a punch to pack, I'd make you pay. Sour grapes. When you see a smiling face, it makes you mad, so mad. Everything I ever do is so delicious, I cut a break. When I really contemplate you, I feel sad, so sad. I guess your mama didn't raise you right, and you wanna take it out on me. You're just a fool.
This is a Funky Town Podcast, and we're at Lola's. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, iTunes and Stitcher, and you can hear us on 97.5 FM The Pirate on Fridays at 6 and Mondays at noon.
Cool.
And today our guest is Carsey Blanton.
That's me.
A little background for people who don't know you. From what I've learned is that you were born in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And you were basically like homeschooled.
I was, yep.
And, except for like 1 year. And mm-hmm. then you went, well, I guess you went to this camp, like this homeschool camp.
I did.
Met other people.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up moving to Eugene, Oregon.
Yep.
When you were 16.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is weird because I have a 12-year-old. And so I can't imagine her being, you know, like in 4 years her wanting to just go.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's a crazy time in anybody's life. A lot can happen. But I'm sure your daughter will be fine.
I'm sure she'll be. Yeah, she's a good
way.
Girl. Yeah.
I'm fine now, too.
Yeah, no, I know. That's what's, cause see, that's what's so interesting about it is that, you know, you seem to be smart, successful, and put together. Mm-hmm. You're not crazy or
addicted to anything.
Right, you know. It's not a bad story. It's a good story, you know. But it's a it's not your typical story.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no public schooling. There's none of that. Now, like, did you ever miss any of the, like, not going to proms or high school football games or anything like that? Kind of feeling out of that general? Because, I mean, like, every movie has that in it.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, I think I missed it more when I was younger, when I was like 12 and 13. That was when I did go to school for 1 year, mm-hmm. when I was like 11 or 12. And that was because I thought I wanted to be like everybody else. And that was a short phase for me.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got into music, and I was more into living a little bit more unconventional life. And then, you know, when I was 16, I left home, and so I wasn't I wasn't around when all my friends were going to prom.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's crazy. But now I have a, my babysitter's daughter is 16. And if there was a girl that was going to go out on her own, it would be her. She's that type. So I kind of think of her, like, when I would hear your story.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be shocking if she moved, you know, two states away or five states away or whatever.
Yeah, I was a strange mix of very precocious and also pretty immature. I mean, like anybody is at that age, I think. But I could definitely make my way in the world, and I think I was ready to try that. But, you know, on the other hand, I was leaving to get away from some stuff I didn't want to have to deal with. And
right.
So it was a mixed bag, like anything, but I think for me it was the right choice.
See, now it was a small town.
It was a real small town.
So I think you outgrew it too fast.
Yes.
You know.
And in a town like that, I mean, that is such a small town. There are so few people who were artists, who were creative, who were into the music I was listening to. And so it was hard to find people to connect with. You know, most the social events happening in Luray, Virginia were like these field parties where everybody goes and gets drunk in a field. Mm-hmm. That's the whole party.
Yeah.
So, like, I was ready for a little more culture, I think.
Yeah. And they do that here. They're small Texas towns. They go out in the middle of nowhere, desert parties or field parties.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and there's little small towns around here to where I've been to some, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, as a kid. It's a different kind of trouble, though, that you get into in a big city.
It is.
I don't know if it's almost better to be out on the back of a truck drinking beer than it is to be,
I don't know,
maybe because kids are, you know, doing heroin and stuff at 16.
Well, they were in the town I grew up in, too.
They were,
I guess in some ways, that small town, there was so little to do that a lot of people got into drugs just out of boredom.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, I would have been better in a bigger town where there was a music scene and some venues to play,
and museums,
shows to see. You know, instead of, like, in this isolated place where the only thing to do was, like, go to a field party and get drunk or try some drugs or whatever.
Just to escape. That's the only way you can get out of there.
Yeah. And for me, leaving home was actually when I, you know, it wasn't like I was leaving and I got into some bad stuff. It was like I was into some bad stuff and then I left. And that was, for me, really good. Like, I, you know, was able to connect with other musicians and explore music and get in a band and stuff like that. That was a much healthier outlet for me, I think. As you can see.
Yeah, but for sure.
Now, still is.
So then you ended up in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching something online, and so you were talking as if you were in Philadelphia, but you recorded your album, Idiot Heart, in New Orleans. Is that right?
Well, so actually, when I made Idiot Heart, I lived in Philly, but I made that in Atlanta.
Oh, in Atlanta.
That record, yeah.
Okay.
And then I moved to New Orleans about 5 years ago. But then I made my new record, So Ferocious, near Philadelphia.
How weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I had some great friends up there. This guy, Pete Donnelly, who co-produced the record with me, he has a little home studio up there. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get a deal.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
There was something that you, I think, said in that same piece that I watched where you liked the Philadelphia music scene because they had a good work ethic. It's what they did. They weren't necessarily trying to be famous, you know. I mean, if it comes, it comes. But that's just, they were musicians. And so they went to work and they just played. And they played around town and they were proud of it and they worked hard at it.
Yeah.
I get that feeling. We have a really good scene here. And it seems like a lot of them, especially like some of the younger kids that actually, they're just like, I just want to play music. And they just play. And
that's great.
And there are a few of them that don't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm,
they make their money playing at a hamburger joint for 3 hours and they get $100 or whatever.
Sure.
And do that a few times a week and you pay rent. And, you know, so I always think it's cool whenever somebody in this line of work does it without having to work at a coffee shop or a waitress or whatever it is, you know, a bank teller or whatever.
Yeah, and I always connect well with towns that have that kind of work ethic about art. And which is true in most towns other than like New York and Nashville and LA, where they're much more about the industry and not so much about the work. New Orleans is a real working class music city as well. People gig all the time. I don't actually gig that much in town, but I tour a lot. But mostly when I'm home, I take writing really seriously and I try to, you know, spend several hours every day in the studio. And I like having kind of a working person's approach to writing.
Yeah.
You know? Not treating it so much like some kind of mystical, magical thing. Although I like that, too. But, you know, you got to get behind the mule in the morning and plow, like Tom Waits says.
Yeah. No, because sometimes it can be, I think, real trying. You were talking about your process at one time and how there were times where you would beat yourself up because you had nothing to say. Like, there was a girl on my Facebook page who wrote a song every day for 100 days straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, how trying is that? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, and I listened to a lot of them, and they were mostly pretty good, but it's like, you can't hit it on the head every day.
Every time, yeah.
I mean, every day, you know,
right.
A brand new song, you know.
Yeah.
But what a practice to get into, because, I mean, after that year, I'm sure she's a way better songwriter than she was.
And she probably has a lot less resistance to it. I think so much of being an artist is getting over that thing where you psych yourself out because you're afraid of what you might do if you try. You're afraid it won't be good enough. You're afraid of failing. You're afraid you'll say something stupid. And just getting over that is more than half of the work, I think. And so if you make yourself write every day or write a song every day or paint a painting every day, I think you just burn off some of your own fear
about
it. And that's huge. I mean, that's so much of writing or performing is you just do it so much that you don't psych yourself out anymore.
Yeah. When I first came across you, I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, and he had a guest on there. Is it Christopher Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name, right? So he was on there, and then I liked him, and he started his own show.
Mm-hmm.
So I started listening to his show, and he used your song Smoke Alarm
at
the beginning and end of his show.
Yep.
And he also interviewed you too.
And
so that was my first exposure to you.
Yeah.
But that was a time in my life where I needed all these things. My favorite shows were all talking about, man, if you like podcasts, start a podcast.
Yeah.
It's not so hard. Just do it. Just get a microphone and just go out and do it. It's so much fun. And and then seeing him actually do it, and then hearing your song, where it's just like, you know, do what you want to do, say what you want to say, feel what you want to feel.
Yeah.
You know, we're all going to die. You know,
yeah.
I know that the song is really about taking a chance on love, especially like when you're nervous and you're like, do they like me? Do they not like me? You know, just go for it.
But it's the same idea.
But it's the same idea for whatever it is. Yeah, whether it's writing a song or doing a podcast or...
Yeah, and that's a big theme in a lot of my work is... And it's because that's what I need to remind myself of all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, you know, life is short. People expect you to be a way that they want you to be, but that doesn't have anything to do with the choices you make. You get to make your own choices.
Right.
And I think everybody needs a reminder of that all the time.
I think
so that's definitely a common, you know, theme that I return to.
Yeah, no, it's important, I think, to learn that... you have to define yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let other people do that.
Yep.
You know. Now, I watch a lot of your videos.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite ones are the ones that are shot in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can just tell.
Yeah.
You know, just
the
people and the, you know. Baby Can Dance is a great song. That video is awesome.
I love that one, too.
All the choreography in it and stuff.
It's actually not choreographed. That's all improvisational
just doing
dancing.
It?
Yeah, it's Lindy Hop is the style, and it's a heavily improvised dance.
Mm.
So they're basically like jazz musicians. They're just playing off of each other to the song.
And it's different parts of the city.
Yep.
One of them is a closed-down amusement park.
Yep. The abandoned Six Flags outside of New Orleans.
There's
been a lot of videos shot there. It's a crazy place.
Oh,
it's like this overgrown amusement park.
Yeah.
Out to
show. I think this is my first time to Fort Worth. So thanks for making it a lovely one. This is another track from the new record. It's called Hot Night. I think it's pretty appropriate for the weather out there right now.
The song that starts off your newest album is Hot Night.
Mm-hmm.
You did a video for that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's a New Orleans as well.
Yep.
And I like the roller skater with the glow around the gas plant or whatever.
Yep.
The old refinery plant.
Yeah, that video too was a lot of improvisation. We walked around the city at night, myself and my director, Andrew Rosario. He just had a little handheld camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so about half the dancers in that video we just found on the street. The guy with roller skates is called Bobby Bonsi, and he's a dancer I've known for a while. But we called him up like 9 p.m., like the night we wanted to shoot. And we were like, we're doing this video, we need another dancer. Will you come out to this power plant with us in Chalmette? And he texted me back, yeah, can I bring my roller skates? And I'm like, yeah, okay.
So, I mean, that's not his bit. He normally does that all the time. He's an actual just dancer.
He's just a dancer, but he's, like, real experimental. And he made these light-up roller skates. He wrapped LEDs all around his roller skates, and he was figuring out how to do, like, break dancing and roller skates.
Now, like, in these dancing scenes, are they actually dancing to your songs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just bring, like, a Bluetooth speaker and play the song a few times and let them dance.
Okay, that's cool.
The other thing that happened in that video that I loved was we found this woman in a bar on Frenchman Street in New Orleans, and she was just grooving to a song, and we thought she looked great. She's, like, an older woman. She looked real. She looked kind of, like a little bit beat up, maybe, like, she, like wearing dirty clothes and, like, kind of like she'd been out on a bender for a few days or something. So we bring her out into the street, and we have her dance to the song, and it turns out she's a bass player, and this song is, like, a real bass-heavy song, so she really loved the song. She danced to it. It was just beautiful and so moving, and then we talk to her, and we find out that she's homeless. Like, I asked her where to send her, if I could send her an email, and she's like, I don't have a phone. I don't have email. I live under a bridge. It was this crazy experience where, like, in some ways, she's my favorite dancer in that video because she's so expressive. And so it was just like a weird, magical kind of New Orleans underworld experience.
And that song does have a crazy bass line.
Yeah.
And I watched you do it live.
Yeah.
And so, like, you didn't even play the guitar. You just kind of used it as a progressive. And the whole thing is carried with the bass.
The bass,
You know, but he does some real, I don't know what kind of chords they are, but he does some kind of chord.
Yeah, some double stops,
I don't know what it is, but it's cool, you know.
Yeah, that's my bass player, Joe Plowman, and he co-wrote that song as well as a few other songs on the record.
And he's been playing with you for a while, right?
Oh, yeah, almost 7 years. We're about to have our anniversary.
That's nice.
We're actually playing Mountain Stage next month on our anniversary, our 7-year anniversary.
That's
cool. Playing together. We're not dating.
Right. You're married, right?
I am married,
For like 2 or 3 years now? Or
yeah, 3 years, but together for almost 10 years.
And now, are you living in the city of New Orleans?
Yeah, pretty much downtown. I live in Treme.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you get all the old buildings and it's just the style and it's so colorful.
Oh, yeah, I love my neighborhood.
Yeah, it's like it shows in all your videos. And I think that's, I think it's one of the things that I liked about you was that you're so proud of, you know, your area.
Yeah.
And I think you even talked about, like, a lot of bands these days, when they become successful, they bring their friends along.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
I think that's neat. There's a guy here that's gone. He's gotten to be where he's pretty big and played a show at the White House for the president.
Wow.
And done all this stuff. But he sits there and tweets about his friends back home.
Yeah.
And here, check out these bands. Or if he meets somebody famous, he'll, you know, like, play one of his friends' CDs for them and
that's
stuff.
Great.
And it's not just because they're his buddies. It's because he really believes in what they do and think it's good and wants to share it with him. And I was like, yeah, that is kind of, but it is kind of how it works at times.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
If you come from a good scene anyways.
Sure. Although I'm really not part of the New Orleans music scene, I have to say. I mean, I've moved around a lot since I've been playing music, and I really identify with a sort of, I have a scene, but they don't live in one particular place. I have a scene of people whose music I love, and they love my music, and we're good friends. Like this guy, Chris Casper, who I'm touring with now. We've been friends for a long time. And there's other artists. There's a fellow called Milton who lives in New York City, and the band the Wood Brothers, who I've toured with a lot. I kind of think of them as part of my musical family. But as far as, like, I just don't play that much in New Orleans, and I'm not that up on what the local scene is, although, you know, I have friends there.
Right.
And stuff.
You did a podcast with some dude who's called Bear Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Bear Rabbit?
Yeah.
Right? And see, I don't know who that is. I really enjoyed at the interview, but I can tell that y'all were friends.
Yeah.
You know, they knew each other and stuff.
Well, his name now is Philip Michael Scales, but he used to go by Briar Rabbit.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting. I was like, oh. And it took me about halfway through, and then he started talking about being black. I was like, whoa, I never would have guessed.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You just, you don't hear color on audio usually.
Yeah, right.
And so that was interesting because y'all got into like a whole.
Yeah, that was a good discussion about racism and sexism. Mm-hmm. That was fun to be able to get into that on a podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's cool because like a lot of your songs are very, you seem very bold and believe in powerful women, you know. And your video, was it Vim and Vigor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has that, you know, where you kind of switch the scales.
Yeah,
instead of the, you know, I mean, instead of the man being around all the beautiful women, you know.
It's me around a bunch of beautiful men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that was fun for me. You know, both with that song and with the video, it was like, what I really wanted to express is this thing of, like, it's sort of two things. One is this idea that I'm a woman and I'm powerful and I want to be able to express my sexuality and not have that be an invitation for people to take advantage of me or to try and threaten me.
Right.
And so to me, that's a lot of my music is about being able to be sort of centered in my sexuality and be expressive about my sexuality and yet not be an object for men, right? So there's a lot of women artists that express their sexuality, but they sort of make themselves an object. And so I'm always looking for that place that I can express that side of myself and yet still be a complex person with lots of emotions and thoughts. And
right.
I can be smart and I can be interesting, I can be witty and all these other things. I don't have to only be sexy. And so that that song and that video is kind of about being empowered in my sexuality. And it's at the same time, it's about sort of flipping, holding up a mirror so that men can see what it feels like to be objectified. And so, you know, in the video, there's all these hot, sort of hard body guys without shirts on, and they're serving me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was interested in to represent there is I wanted men to be able to watch it and to feel uncomfortable in the way that I feel uncomfortable when I watch most other music videos. Because, you know, 80% of music videos have a bunch of hot women in them, right? And when I watch that, that gives me a certain feeling that it might not give you as a man. And I wanted men to be able to experience that just to sort of get the other side of the story.
Yeah, no, I think that's important, you know, because...
And it was also fun.
Yeah. Yeah, because even like the very last scene where you're all in the pool and stuff, you know, I mean, it was almost like a hip-hop scene, but turned around.
Yeah, right. You know? Well, and I get to the sort of... The money shot of that video is that I spray champagne on all these guys' faces.
Uh-huh.
And that was great too, just because it's like, there's so many things that we see every day that we stop processing them as like, oh, this is dehumanizing. Like, this makes this woman into a sex object and we don't know anything about her. We don't know what her thoughts or feelings or personality is. We don't know if she likes this or doesn't like this. And you so rarely see men in that position. But then when you do, it looks really shocking.
Right.
So it sort of brings up how desensitized you are to seeing women in that situation. So I did a lot of things where I wanted to really shock you. I wanted to make you go, oh, why is she spraying champagne on those guys? Like, oh, why is she touching all those guys' packages?
Yeah, because when you walked on, just like the whole line, just ding, 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 down the line
of packages, yeah. And it's funny because a lot of people, every woman I've showed that video to gets it right away, and they love it right away. And I would say about 50% of men really don't like it.
Really?
And I have to explain what it's about, and then eventually they're like, oh, I see why this is important that I watch this.
Mm-hmm.
But so that was sort of an interesting project to make something that makes some people really uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, and it shot nice. I mean, everything looks great.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Like the actual framing and all of that stuff. And
yeah, we really went for it.
And the song itself is right on, too.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
You know, because you have a lot of... jazz influence. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to ask you how to define your music, because I know you don't like that question. But it's weird, you know, because you do have a... Because I tried to, I was like, I don't know what kind of music it is. I guess it's kind of pop.
Yeah,
if you
it's
had to
it's
just,
kind of pop.
You know,
yeah.
But yeah, but it's got jazz and folk and, you know, all different kinds of stuff. And I think you called Idiot Heart, I think, like, would we say it was influenced by Zydeco? Or
oh,
something?
Zydeco.
Zydeco.
Yeah, it's got a Zydeco rhythm.
See, I hadn't heard that. But, but it almost sounded, if you added some slide in something, it could be like a country song. You know?
Sure, yeah.
And I think you could do, like, some good country, you know? I think your voice would work in some of the country songs and stuff as well.
Yeah, well, for me, you know, I started out as a songwriter, and I still identify first as a songwriter, and second as, like, a musician and a singer and a performer, a recording artist, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And as a songwriter, I'm always looking for the form that will get the concept and the feeling of the song across the best. And I have lots and lots of different influences to draw on, and so the form the song takes is different depending on the song. And I feel most creatively free when I don't have any allegiance to genre, when I can write a country song, write a jazz song, write a, you know, novelty song, and then write a pop song, and then write a hip-hop song. So, like, the new record is the most like that, where each song's really its own genre.
It does have a feel,
But my previous records have been a little more like this one is all kind of sounds the same, and then the next one's a really different genre, but it's all similar to itself. In this record, I felt really free to move through all the different genres that I love and be as expressive as I need to be, depending on the song, you know.
Is this the one that you totally kickstarted it, or most
of
it?
Yeah, So Ferocious was kickstarted, as well as the previous record. So I've used Kickstarter for both of the last two records.
That's cool.
But yeah, that's one great thing about Kickstarter is that, you know, people give me the money in exchange for the record, and it's not like a record label where they have an interest in making sure what comes out is to their liking and is something they can market. So, you know, if I raise 30 grand from Kickstarter, then that's 30 grand to make whatever record I want to make.
Yeah.
In whatever way I want to make it. So I really like that arrangement better than the sort of older industry model.
Yeah, and because the people that are buying it are like, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, if she makes a record, I'm going to buy it. Whatever she wants to do, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, exactly. And even, you know, this hasn't really happened, but, like, theoretically, I could give them a record they don't like, and that's part of the deal. They know that going in.
Right.
They're
going
to pay for whatever I make, and they're willing to...
Take that chance.
Take the chance, yeah. Which feels much more natural to me than, like, having somebody invest in you who needs to see a return on their investment.
So you don't ever worry about, like, that when you're writing, oh, this song might be too weird. I shouldn't put that out there. Maybe this will... Or do you not even do any kind of self-editing or whatever when it comes to that?
Well, I'll say I'm getting better at not self-editing the older I get. You know, I've been writing for a little more than half my life now, and so I think it's just part of the process of the more songs I write, the more it doesn't feel too risky. It feels like, all right, I'm just going to... It's just another song. You know, I've got hundreds of them. I can write one more. It's not a big deal. So if it comes out in a way I don't like, then, oh, well, I'll throw it on the scrap pile and write another one. It's kind of like what I was saying earlier, when, you know, you perform a lot, you burn off your performance anxiety. When you write a lot, you burn off your writer's anxiety.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ferocious is the new album, and that's the video that has all the girls in it.
Yeah.
One's fighting...
Martial arts.
Yeah,
and
one's
boxing. And hip-hop dancing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really fun video. I mean, that video, right after I wrote the song, I got the idea for the video, and I really wanted it to be these three really cute little girls who can all fight, like, really badass. Like, they could really hurt you if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And then it took me, like, a month. I cast all three girls. Two of them were from Louisiana, one of them was from L.A., and I, like, flew her out to dance in the video. Nehemiah Stubbs, she's going to be famous. Yeah, so the video's all black and white, and it's these three girls fighting to my song. And it sort of starts out, you think they're going to be just adorable. And as you watch it, you realize how ferocious they are, which is the theme of the song. It's kind of like, you're trying to bully me because you think I can't stand up to you, but I'm so ferocious.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. Yeah. And like I said, I love that. I don't know. I've always been girl crazy.
Yeah.
You know, since I was a little boy. But I've always, you know, been a little sensitive and stuff. And so... I don't know, I always got along easier with girls than boys. I was never as masculine, I guess, or as, you know, not into sports or the cars as hard sports. Yeah, you know, so I would rather just sit and talk to the girls about poetry or whatever.
Yeah.
But, so I guess I just, I don't know, I'm sure that I still have the sexist male, stuff like all guys do, you know. I try to be aware of it, though.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
But having... like, it's like, there was a point where it's like I had, there was my wife and my daughter, and we had like a female dog and two female cats. And it's like, man, it's like, yeah. I always wish to be surrounded by women, and yeah. that's all I'm surrounded
and now you
by.
Are.
Yeah,
that's
you know,
great.
So you gotta be careful. Well, sometimes, you know. But,
yeah.
But no, I think this kind of, I like female music these days because it does seem more bold.
Yeah.
And all the norms are going away as far as like the
gender norms.
Yeah, you know, it's like whenever I grew up, there was my mom was the main breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
My dad didn't graduate high school, and so he always had just blue collar jobs, and she worked in insurance, so she made more money than him. Mm-hmm. So she was a breadwinner. So there were times whenever he was cooking dinner and he was doing dishes, I would see him vacuum, and so it was never weird to think of a man doing those kind of things.
Well, that's great.
My dad was also a preacher, a Pentecostal preacher, so I would see him cry and stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that I would think that a man had to be whatever, my dad was the most manliest man of all, and he cooked and cleaned and cried and stuff, so it's okay to do these things.
That's great. Yeah.
And so I think the same example needs there to be there for girls too, these strong you know, female types that are in charge. And, you know, I'm in charge of my body. I'm in charge of my mind.
Yeah.
I'm in charge of my image.
Right.
This is me, you know.
Yeah, well, I think that's the dream, is that, you know, everybody gets to be who they are in their sort of essential soul, whatever gender or race or class they're born into.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is the dream, and who knows if we'll ever get there, but
it seems like we get closer every year.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still a lot of fight back and stuff.
I still think that just being that way yourself is the good for the world, you know. I think being an example, it's not like, I'm a strong woman, I want to be a role model for other strong women, but I also think it's about just being who I am, and that should inspire anybody to be who they are.
Right.
That's what I'm looking to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're the opposite of me,
mm-hmm.
I should still be able to, you know, be an example of being the way I really am.
Right.
Just not bullshitting, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's what it is. That's right on.
Yeah.
So have you been to Fort Worth before? You ever come? Because it's like,
this
I don't even remember.
It's a trick question because I can't remember if I've
ever. Oh, you ever? Okay. Yeah, because no, I mean, like I said, I've only been listening probably since the Idiot Heart album.
Yeah.
And I don't remember you ever coming through.
Yeah, well, I've come through Dallas a bunch, and I don't think I've ever come to Fort Worth, but as I'm saying that, I'm like, there's something in the back of my mind telling me I have. I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that one day you get tired of New Orleans and make your home here.
Oh, yeah.
And join this music scene. It's a cool scene around here.
Cool, all right.
You know.
Good to know.
Let's see if I have any questions that I did want to talk to you about your song, Is It Loving Is Easy?
Mm-hmm. Here's another song about the animal I am. The animal I am falls in love all the time. That's just how it is. It's been like, I fall in love with great regularity since I was about 11. So at one point, you just get used to it. You don't try and change it anymore. And that's what this song's about. It's called Loving Is Easy. I'm in love with you. It's all right. I fall in love nearly every night. And it fills up my heart, so I can't keep it in. I get suddenly foolish and humble and young. I'm in love with you. Don't be afraid. I fell in love with the love that we made. But it's none of my business if you can love me. You don't have to earn it. I'm giving it free. 'Cause love is easy. It's taking a breath. I do it all day till the day of my death. I don't wanna own you. You don't have to stay. Just as long as I've known you, I wanted to say I'm in love with you. I'm in love with you.
See, that's so, like when I was saying that I'm girl crazy. Well,
yeah.
I'm also a people crazy, and it's like I would find myself, you know, what I would say, falling in love with all these different people, and it didn't mean that I wanted to date them necessarily, or that I wanted to have sex with them.
Right.
It just meant that I really, I was,
just love them,
you know,
yeah,
just for no reason. I don't know. They're just really cute, or they're really funny, or they're just there's something magnetic about it, but it seems weird, and, you know, and I can't go home to my wife and say, oh man, I met this girl tonight, she's so great, I'm in love with her. She'd be like, what are you talking about? You know, but it doesn't, that's not what it means necessarily. I mean, it can mean that, but you know, and that's what was really great about your song is that, you know, and you do touch some of those, because love can be sticky at times and tricky. And
well, it means different things to different people at different times, and I think, you know, Some people want to fight that and make it mean one thing, and I don't think it's possible. I think it's such a complex emotion
that
you just have to let it mean a lot of things. And to me, it means a lot of things, and one of the things is, oh, wow, I'm just full of feeling. Like, I just am full of love.
That's what it is, you know?
And that thing happens to me a lot. That's kind of what the song's about, is I'm in love with you, but it's all right. I fall in love almost every night. That's the opening line, and that's... To me, that's the most honest thing that I can say in a lot of situations. And
yeah,
like
you,
it took
and you don't
me
have to
so
love me
long.
Back.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's not important that they love me back. It's just, I love you.
I'm just
that's,
telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took me so much of my life. I mean, I just wrote that song. I'm 31. So it took me about 30 years to be able to admit to myself and to other people that what I'm feeling is love. And, like, just because that word has a lot of baggage doesn't make that not what I'm feeling.
Right.
You know? So I think I've gotten better at being able to explain that. But it's still true. I mean, I've fallen in love every month or two since I was probably 11, you know? And at this point, it's happened so many times, I just roll with it. It's not quite as scary as it used to be.
No, and there's... and the good news is there's so many lovely people.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a wonderful world when you fall in love all the time.
Yeah, it really
is. Nothing
to be afraid of. Right. No, you're totally right. I also like your song, Fat and Happy. And
yeah.
So, and that was about one of your haters.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
When I'm fat and happy and high on the hog, will you still be moaning like a three-legged dog? Will you still be lying like a buck on a log? When I'm fat and happy and high on the hog. When I'm fat and happy and rich as a roo, will you know of it?
Yeah,
I can't believe that you even have haters.
Oh, well, I don't have too many, but I got in a little internet flame war with somebody a few years ago, and they really pissed me off. And then I wrote this song, Fat and Happy, that's just sort of like, it's sort of, it's about like, one day I'm going to be famous and happy, and you're still going to be just hating on people, because that's all you do is sit around and hate.
Right.
So the whole song is kind of like, I do all cool stuff, and I get to have fun, and one day I'll be fat and happy and high on the hog, and you'll still just be hating.
Yep.
That's kind of So Ferocious is about that same thing.
Right.
It's like, you know, bullies, we give bullies a lot of power when we respond to them with, like, this feeling of, like, hey, why do you want to hate on me? What did I do? As opposed to, like, well, I'm going to be me, and I'm going to do what I do. And if what you do is hate, that's on you.
Right.
That has nothing to do with me.
Right. That's the baggage that they're carrying.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But yeah, but it is hard to learn that sometimes. Like, why do they hate me?
I know.
I'm very likable.
Yeah,
I'm nice to everybody.
You
can't hate me or whatever. You know.
And I have a tendency. I mean, I am pretty neurotic. Like, despite all the songs are about being bold and being empowered, and that's because that's what I need to tell myself all the time. And so, you know. But inside me is that little voice, just like with anybody, that's constantly saying, like, do they like me? Is the new record good enough? Did I get a good enough gig? Did enough people come to the show? What does that guy think? That guy didn't like the record. I wonder why. What did I do wrong? Should I make a better one next time? All those voices are in my head, too. And, man, it takes so much work just to, like, rise above it.
just to silence them. And,
yeah.
You know. Well, I'm really excited about the show tonight.
Cool.
I really, like I said, I was seeing you posted all your dates, and I was like, man, I wish you'd come to Fort Worth. Nobody ever comes here, you know? And then I'm looking through, and it's like, did you go to Austin yesterday?
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And I was like, Lola. She's going to Lola's. That's
nice.
Awesome. I come here all the time. This is a great
cool.
bar.
Oh, good. Yeah,
you know,
it seems
this
really
is
sweet.
Always voted one of the best places to see live bands.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
And stuff. And so,
cool. Well, I'm happy to be here.
Now, I was curious to see how the live thing happens, but is it just you and the bass player?
Yep, just duo for this part. So some of this tour we've done with a full band, mm-hmm. but this part and the West Coast, and I guess just Texas and the West Coast, we're doing just duo. It's all those really long distances between shows and a little bit smaller crowds out here than we have on the East Coast, so
yeah.
It's more economical. Just do the duo show.
and you can drive a smaller vehicle because you have
a
space.
Smaller car, we're in the station wagon.
Well, he has that big old stand-up, so you still got to have a pretty big vehicle.
We have a station wagon. He's got a stand-up that is a travel base, the net comes off.
Oh.
So he breaks it down every night.
Oh. That's kind of a drive. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Where are you going next?
We have a couple days off to get to L.A., so we'll be in L.A. on Thursday.
And have you ever done or heard of So Far?
So Far.
It's So Far
somebody
sounds,
just mentioned that to me.
Yeah,
what is it?
That would be, it sounds from a room, I think is what So Far means.
Okay.
From, so they'll get different bands and put them in an intimate setting.
Uh-huh.
And they play, I think you get so much time, but it's usually like three or four songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually like an acoustic or a quiet type set, but everybody just sits around.
Cool.
Nobody talks. They sit there quietly and listen to everything you say.
Cool.
You know, sing and play.
And
so
they put these shows on? This
All over the world.
Wow.
And
okay.
They pick them, and they usually pick houses
yeah.
or really different, anybody can host it, but it's usually weird places.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Homes are really cool. Like, the one that I saw here, it was in this Unitarian church. No, it wasn't a Unitarian. Yeah, I think it was a Unitarian. But it was a little church.
Cool.
You know? And so, but yeah, the new thing about it is, like, I was curious to see how it goes here. Because
mm-hmm.
it's mostly like a rock and roll bar, and people will stand around and drink and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And so, there may be people talking during your, you know, show.
Yeah.
At times, and you're like, you know? But at these things are like, they're just like, nobody talks.
Yeah.
It's really, everybody just listens to every note, and,
yeah.
and they sit like this close. I mean, you're like playing right in front of them,
yeah,
so it's
cool.
real intimate.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's real
neat.
Yeah,
I think the person who told me about it is in Italy. We're going to Italy in November,
mm-hmm.
and so I think they might be putting together a show or something.
That would be cool. So far.
Yeah.
Be like So Far in Italy. Wow,
yeah.
that'd be neat.
would.
Yeah,
cool.
But no, it's a real neat group, and like I said, they have them all over the world, and they do. About time.
Just checking time.
That's Joe. That'll be your sound guy.
Yep.
He's a great dude.
I met him earlier. He's cool.
Yeah, he's real cool. No, I love our city. That's why I started the at this podcast was just to show people, you know, how cool our city was
yeah.
and stuff. You
oh,
know?
That's great.
And so, but I was so excited about you could come into town. I was like, cool. All right, cancel the show for that week. I'm going to go to this show.
And then
I was like, well, you know what? She might talk to me. I'm going to ask and
yeah,
see.
Of course.
So,
no, I'm glad you did.
And it's really cool to have you on, and I can't wait to see you play tonight.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try and play the songs you mentioned. I'll play at least some of those.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, because I'm going to try to record them, and maybe I can put the live versions in on this.
Great. That'd yeah, cool. That'd be cool.
Well, it was great to meet you.
Awesome. You too, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you guys again for being here. We're going to give you a hand. Yay! Chris Casper opened the show tonight. We love him. Joe Plowman played the bass. We love him. And I'm Carsey Glinton. And I love you. Oh, I almost forgot. CDs, I mentioned, but also there's vinyl records, and also there are So Ferocious underwear in men's and women's fashions. We only have a few pairs left, so impress your friends who might see you in your underwear. Buy So Ferocious underwear. I also have chocolate, and it is So Ferocious flavored. And in case you wonder what that flavor is, it's port wine caramel dark chocolate. That is the flavor of ferocity. My CDs are available pay what you please, both here and on the website, and I do that because I think that music is more important than money. Clearly I think that, or I would have a different job. So I want to give you the music because I love it, and I'm happy to make it. I think I'm good at it, and I just want to give it to you.
Yeah.
And I hope that you guys make money, and that you're happy to make money, and that you're good at it, and that you'll just give it to me. So we can do that over there. Thanks again for listening, you guys. I'm Carsey. Well, it really isn't such a bad day today. Still a little music in my head, but I've grown to a halt like a mouthful of salt, and suddenly I'm full of dread, thinking I'm so hungry. I'm so thirsty. Give me sugar, give me wine. Give me passion, fame and fortune. Mute my metal and mine. Give me a thrill, I can't sit still. I already tried counting to 10, but it itches and tugs like a bag full of bugs. Baby, when can I see you again? I got a heart so hot in the summertime. Give me passion, fame, and fortune.